welcome back to Tiny Voice Talks. I am so excited, as always, that you've come to join me. But I've been joined today by not one, not two, not three, but four amazing people. I know, four. And they've come to talk to me about reading for pleasure. I mean, I'm really lucky that I've been joined by Teresa Kremen, Ben Harris, Sonia Thompson, and Richard Charlesworth. So welcome, all of you.
Hi, thanks. Hi, thanks for having me.
It's so exciting having four people. I've never done this before. It's going to be a completely new experience. So the question I always ask everyone at the beginning of my podcast is who is, and then their name. So I'm going to just have to do this one by one. So we'll start off with who is Teresa Kremen?
Teresa Kremen's a researcher at the Open University, ex-primary teacher and passionate about reading for pleasure.
Fantastic. And who is Sonia Thompson?
Sonia Thompson is a head teacher of a teaching and research school in Neatchells, Birmingham, who loves reading for pleasure. Passionate, I think that's the word.
Absolutely. And who is Rich Charlesworth?
Hi, I'm an English lead at Springwell School. I'm part of a wider team and, really passionate about picture books. That's my sort of big pleasure. I'm an advocate for that.
And finally, who is Ben Harris?
I'm a year six teacher. I've been teaching for about 20 years now. Used to be an advanced skills teacher and assistant head as well. But now I'm back in the classroom. I'm very much promoting the reading for pleasure agenda.
Well, we've all come along today because that's what you're all passionate about, reading for pleasure. You live and breathe reading, really. So for those that aren't too sure, what exactly, in your mind, is reading for pleasure? Teresa, I'll start with you.
Okay, well, for me, reading for pleasure is when kids choose to read, or indeed when adults choose to read. It doesn't matter what they choose to read, because that's their choice, of course. They're the reader. And so it's choosing to read what you want to read, when you want to read it, and potentially doing that pretty frequently. It may not always be a pleasure. Sometimes it may be a pain, an irritation, what you read in the newspaper, or you read a book that's emotionally demanding. But it's choosing to do it. That's what I think.
I love that. Really simply put, yet so powerful. What about you, Rich? What's reading for pleasure to you?
I think for me, it's that sort of, it's balancing the sort of skills that we teach within the classroom with that will. And for me, reading for pleasure sort of leans on the will a lot more. It's getting the sort of, as Teresa says, children who sort of want to read, who want to go out and explore different text types and talk about them with their sort of peers, with their teacher, with their families at home. So it's that kind of organic, almost contagious sort of book chat that I love about reading for pleasure.
Absolutely. And what about you, Sonia? What's reading for pleasure to you?
I think for me, definitely agree with what everyone else says, but it's certainly about empowering children to have that agency to read what they want or not to read what they want. Choices. And children understanding and then being empowered to understand the power of reading to bring emotion and to bring feelings and to understand that power and to use it in a positive way. So I think that's what reading for pleasure is for me.
Absolutely. And finally, Ben, what does reading for pleasure mean to you?
I think it's interesting you've asked us all, what does it mean to you? Because for reading for pleasure for me is very much a personal thing. And when I'm thinking about the children in my class as individual readers, I have to think, well, they're very different to me. So the sort of thing that makes me pick up a book or a leaflet or a comic, it might be different for them. So it's a very personal thing, first of all. But I think for me, one of the things that binds that all together as a group of readers who read for pleasure is when you want to talk about your reading. I mean, I think about when I read a novel, I just immediately then want to go out and talk to people about it, about the things that I've really enjoyed or things that I spotted about it. So I think when you see that happening with the children, you know that reading for pleasure is happening and that you can engage them with that talk.
Absolutely. I agree completely. And I think it is a personal thing. I spoke to a friend of mine this morning saying that I was going to be interviewing all of you. And she said, well, why? She said, you never read for pleasure. And I thought that was a really interesting thing for her to say, because actually, I read for pleasure a lot. I just don't necessarily read the books that she would consider reading for pleasure. So on that note, and going back to you, Ben, how do we measure pleasure? Oh, I quite like that, measure pleasure.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because we can measure children's reading in school. Well, the way we do it at the moment is obviously, you know, how they're getting on with their SATs results or their phonics checks. And what's tested in those things is the reading skills, the inference, the retrieval, the decoding. But when you think about readers, we obviously do all of those things when we're passionate readers. We infer, we retrieve information. We obviously have to engage with the text and understand what it's saying. But we also have this other thing going on, which is how we want to enjoy what we're reading. It's something that we choose to do, like Teresa and Rich and Sonia were talking about. So in the classroom, how do you see that? Because it's not something you can test. You can't test children's pleasure. You can't measure it in that sort of way. I mean, I use surveys to look at how children feel about their reading, the effective quality of their reading that's had on them. And that's one way of measuring it, because you can see a child maybe come into you in September and they say, I really don't like reading very much. And then you can do things in the classroom and with parents at home to help support that child. And then you can see, did that make a difference by Christmas? And even if they're still saying, no, I don't really like reading, do you notice things such as are they using independent reading time in the classroom, for instance, to go and find books or comics that they enjoy? Are they talking about their reading more with their peers? Are they sharing things more? So I think all of those sorts of things are really important to notice. It's little things that you notice, and hopefully by discussing with the child as well, how they're feeling about their reading is a way you can measure it informally.
Thank you. Yeah, and actually when you're mentioning that, talking to the child, I know, Teresa, that you and Ben and Rich have been working on a project all about book talk, which is going to support teachers and parents in chatting to children about books.
Yeah, so it's been absolutely great fun. Through lockdown, we were creating with Macmillan children's books, and we looked at three particular books, and we kind of just shared them, read aloud the books, but not for children, but for teachers and for parents, to try and help that kind of casual, incidental, conversational stuff that goes around when you're reading a book to and with children, so that involves the kids in and prompts them to get involved. It's not a quiz, it's not a comprehension, it's not a hard-nosed question and answer, and it's certainly not a focus on what vocabulary don't you know and what do we need to, you know, add to your vocabulary book, but more of that kind of conversational meaning making of a fabulous children's book.
Yeah.
And so we analysed our own conversations when we were reading and talking about text, and we began to try and develop some sort of top tips so that the conversation, as Ben said, the book talk is critical, because if you're a reader, you're chatting with another reader and thinking, oh, I wonder why they did that, or oh, I hope that's not going to happen, or oh, look at his face, I think he's feeling lonely, isn't he? So we might trigger the kind of conversation where children are joining in, and we're trying to surface more of the meaning. So I hope the videos, which are called, it's called Book Chat, Developing a Love of Reading with Your Child. And we hope that those videos, which are you can find the link to on the Open University's Reading for Pleasure website, I think those videos hopefully will give teachers and parents that kind of support for the informal conversational chat, the book chat, that makes such a difference to kids' motivation, to their desire to read. It joins them in as readers rather than only listeners or reading to themselves. It's that kind of double bond, really, the dialogic bit of reading.
I love the way you've put that. I really do. And Rich, I know that you are passionate about book talk and you use it all the time in your class. And what I find really interesting is that you're a year six teacher, yet you are passionate about picture books and use those all the time in your book talk.
Yeah, it's one of the key sort of loves. I'm sort of a bit of an avid collector, as I'm sure lots of us listening are as well. And I think the key difference for me is that picture books you can sort of read within a session, but it's that kind of impact that they have. And I'm really interested in that relationship. We did a sort of, as Teresa just mentioned, two of the texts, one of the texts that we looked at with Key Stage 2 was a picture book called A House That Once Was. And it allows you to explore themes and look at challenging concepts. And I think when we're talking about book chat, and especially talking about reading for pleasure, which, as sort of Ben said, some part of it is kind of, it's immeasurable, sort of the impact that you have on sort of children as readers. You can't really track that sort of through adulthood. But what we want to try and do is capture their imagination and get them enthusiastic. And I find that picture books really sort of allow that. It's partly sort of, I look a lot at my own practice, and a lot of it is down to sort of how we model as teachers and practitioners in the classroom, how we model that book chat. But then as soon as the children start to sort of pick bits of information, or even sort of phrases that we use, open-ended questions, I wonder ifs, it gets the children, it gives them sort of the ingredients that they can then hopefully take that sort of pleasure and sort of pass it on as well. So it's picture books are a big part of my teaching, and heartily advocate for year six teachers to be grabbing picture books. There's so much depth and discussion to them. Yeah, 100%.
And there really is. I, as you know, I'm a picture book advocate as well. And I know Ben is. I think all of us on here actually are. Sonia, I'm going to come to you next, because we've got reading for pleasure and we've got teaching reading. But how, as a head teacher, do you ensure quality of reading and that balance of skill and will is happening in every classroom?
I think for me, it is about teachers, schools investing time in supporting teachers to understand the power of reading for pleasure and the impact of reading for pleasure on reading for progress. I think this idea of the skill and the will together, working together. I mean, we all know those children who are often passionate readers, who often do extremely well in any type of any type of comprehension activities, because they've got that background knowledge that the reading for pleasure often often empowers children to have, as well as the vocabulary. So I think it's an easy win for schools to really understand the power of reading for pleasure in supporting that wider agenda, that accountability agenda, that we're so often so constantly having to face as head teachers. For me, you can't separate the two. And it certainly worked for us in that the more we've empowered and given teachers time, and I think that's important, and space to engage with reading for pleasure, and then them being able to take that back into the classroom, as well as out into parents, empowering parents, I've seen the benefit of that. So for me, it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. They go together. And that includes the types of texts, which is talking about picture books, and ensuring that all types of reading are available for children, because, again, you're trying to encourage that agency, and it hopefully supporting them to uncover the thing that will work for them as readers, and will empower them then to go on and read more. So, yeah, important.
Thank you. And actually, on that note, I'm going to come to Ben. Ben, I know that you don't have a reading corner, but you have a reading classroom. Can you unpick that further for the listeners?
Yeah. So in my classroom, I mean, in a traditional classroom, that you might be thinking about having a reading corner where there's a display of books, perhaps, or a selection of books that children can choose from, maybe during independent reading time, or that you use for the topics or your story time. But I'm very much influenced by what Aidan Chambers wrote about. He did two very important books, many, many books, but two particularly important ones for me as a teacher that really changed my perspective. One was Tell Me, which is the book about book talk and how you engage in discussion. And the other one is The Reading Environment. And when I looked at that one, it's very much about your whole school showing and oozing books and reading. And I really want to make it clear as well about when we say about reading for pleasure, we often say books. I say books, but that might also be comics, leaflets, magazines, posters. We need to engage the children with everything around them as being text-led, so that they feel that their lives are surrounded by that. So my classroom has got a corner where there is a table with a display of books, and it's got some a little sort of cupboard where you can get some books out and some shelves. But there's text everywhere. There's comic. There's piles of comics. There's poetry all over the place. So I think that when Chambers wrote about the reading environment, I mean, it's come back in CLPE's latest book as well, talking about the reading environment. It's massively important that it's not seen as a corner or a place, but there's text everywhere that children can browse and enjoy and see that's there.
Thank you. And Sonia, I know that your school is basically a reading school. Mm. So wherever you go, there are books. Can you just, for leaders listening who are a bit like, well, how on earth do I start on that journey? How did you and where are you now?
I do think it's a senior leadership team led agenda. I think if, you know, you can always have teachers in classrooms doing fantastic things around reading for pleasure, but often that will stay in a classroom. And I think what we were able to do is to empower all of the teachers. And again, I go back to that training and space and time for teachers to familiarise themselves with good books, to have space to talk about good books, to share the great websites, the Research Rich Pedagogy's website, for instance, where you can find surveys and examples of good practice. If you give teachers the space and time to do that, and they realise that actually this school is serious about this, it's not a one-day thing. It's something that my head teacher kind of expects from me, my senior leaders expect from me. And I think quickly teachers begin to realise that actually that is the practice of the school. And I'd like to think that anybody who came into my school would get a sense that that is our practice. It's not pretense. It's not something we do for book week or poetry day. It's something that we do all the time. So I really do think, you know, I always say that we put it into our documentation so that we know that we're accountable and other people hold us accountable for ensuring that our children, our parents, our community are surrounded and enveloped and enclosed in a rich reading environment. So yeah, it's certainly something that is St. Matthew's. I'd say St. Matthew's, reading for pleasure, St. Matthew's.
I love that. And Rich, what about your school? Is it a whole school thing?
Yeah, we're on sort of the start of our journey. We sort of joined an infant and a junior school just over a year ago. So we're sort of at the beginning of that journey. But it's so crucial, as Sonia says, to get the leadership team on board. And my head teacher, sort of the conversations that she has with me in front of the children and with the children, most crucially, when we're sort of in the middle of looking at picture book, she comes in and we'll have that open dialogue, and it will take us on to different avenues of thought and learning. And sort of, you might call it sort of tangential, but it's that idea of sort of, it sparks ideas and it sparks that dialogue around books. And I think if you've got leadership who sort of embody that, as well as sort of that practice, and I suppose it's that confidence that Sonia's talking about, confidence that if a member of the leadership team come into your classroom, they're not sort of judging you, they're not analysing you, they're there sort of for the children. And that conversation that you build up in your classroom around books is so important. And it's something that I'd like to sort of, like Ben mentioned, about having this whole reading classroom rather than it just being sort of in a corner. It's this sort of idea of having books everywhere, on the doors, papered around the sort of displays, everywhere in the school, with your governors, with any visitor, sort of arm them with books, I think is really important. So yeah, we're on the beginnings of that journey, but it's going well.
Yeah, and I think listening to all of you, it is so important to move away from that. The initial picture, I think, that some people have of reading for pleasure as being the tent and the campfire in the corner of the classroom that only two children can fit in, that actually it's about having a wealth of texts out there, regardless of, you know, what those texts are, and ensure that it is, you know, children are able to live and breathe books, but also that teachers are. Teresa, coming to you, Not all teachers know lots about children's books. How can they learn more?
Well, there are lots of different ways, I think, Toria, but I think it's probably worth the first port of call is for teachers to kind of recognise perhaps I need to widen my repertoire. Mm. There's a simple audit on the Research Rich Pedagogy's site, which asks teachers, like our original research did, to name half a dozen picture fiction creators, half a dozen poets, half a dozen graphic novelists, etc. And just by doing that can actually be quite kind of helpful. It's a bit like a, you know, I recognise I know a lot of authors, but I don't know many poets, for example. And then that begins to help a teacher set their own challenge for saying, where do I need to go? What do I need to, you know, what area or genre do I need to focus on? And then to take some steps forward. I mean, in our original research, a bit depressingly, Victoria, to be honest, was 22% couldn't name a poet out of 1,200 teachers right across the UK.
Oh, my gosh.
And 24% couldn't even name a picture fiction creator, let alone one for Key Stage 2, Rich. You know, some of those were Key Stage 1 teachers. But they couldn't name a single person who had created that because the profile of teachers' knowledge of children's literature and other texts wasn't high enough. I still think there's lots of space to grow in that. And so I think if teachers do want to take the step to widen their repertoire, one thing would be potentially to join an Open University and UK Literacy Association teachers' reading group. Last year, we had 101 groups right across the country and a couple abroad. And I'm sure teachers would be able to find one in their area from the website and then join up. This year, they're virtual, so it's a bit easier to join. But they're not just book groups, to be fair. They are reading for pleasure CPD groups, so trying to develop teachers' knowledge and then their practice back to that rich reading environment, back to that, you know, opportunities for book talk, for independent reading time and reading aloud, all framed to foster readers, to foster choosing to read, not to teach reading. As well, there's a subtle shift, and we need both kinds of practices. One to read aloud to teach literacy, but we also want to read aloud to foster readers for tomorrow, children who choose to read. So I think the more knowledge you have of a wide range, the more you can enthuse the children, the more you can share, the more you can make good recommendations. So I'd say join a local group. If possible, certainly go on Twitter and ask for some recommendation. I'm teaching year three and I need some really brilliant books to read aloud that are short stories. Anybody? And you'll get sort of 50 by nightfall if you're connected to this crew.
You really will.
You will. Sonia, amazing.
Sonia, going on to you though, from Teresa's point, did you find whenever you started on your journey with St Matthew's that your teachers had a good understanding of children's literature, or were you starting from that very sort of, well, basic level knowledge?
I think you always get teachers who are very passionate, who are very knowledgeable. But I think as a staff, we certainly needed to empower teachers and support teachers to acknowledge the pedagogy around, to understand, I think, first of all, and to then acknowledge the pedagogy around reading for pleasure. I don't think schools are always familiar with some of the key things that the research says works, that enable a strong reading culture and that support children to embed reading for pleasure practices. So I think it was an imperative really for us as a school to support teachers to gain that understanding and then implement it within their classrooms as part of the curriculum. I think for us it is part of the curriculum. It's not a separate thing. You know, things like the end of day reading, just empowering teachers to understand that that doesn't drop off at the end of the day if you're trying to extend and try and do a little bit more history, then actually we need to make sure that reading for pleasure doesn't become a casualty of any other subject. And I think when I first started at St Matthew's, it was very much about paroling the corridors and checking that teachers had put things away and had, you know, enabled an environment where children could really enjoy being read to. So I think it is about making sure that teachers are clear about why you're doing it. And there's an understanding of the research and the evidence base around the importance of reading for pleasure. I think that's often a great way of getting schools to begin that journey and to understand why it needs to become embedded within the culture of the school.
Thanks, Sonia. And actually, you've just triggered a memory of mine just from last week, actually, when I I was chatting to a child and they said that they had never had a full book read to them in their class, that the teachers always started but never finished. And I thought, gosh, how awful, how absolutely dreadful to have a couple of chapters read, but you never know sort of that you never get the full thing read. Anyway, that's a complete aside, but it really upset me. So moving on to Ben. Ben, I know that you are absolutely passionate, that's understating it, about having book chats on Twitter, etc. How can people become involved in those? Because they're a wonderful way to learn more about books.
They are. I think, there's various ones that are out there. Scott Evans runs the Primary School Book Club. Simon Smith and a few others, I think, join in with the picture book one. Those are two. Scott's one is really good for the latest books, and so that sort of freshness. You get to pick one each month that's to do with the latest ones that are out in the shops. Simon's one is a great one because you can. Some months they focus on one picture book illustrator. So they've done, I think, David Wiesner, Aaron Becker. So those are great because you can really sort of dive into the style and thinking behind how authors have created a picture book. But the good thing about all of them is they're all very informal. They're very friendly. And I think that sense of being among friends is so important. I mean, I run Books Near Bedtime as well. And when I set that up in lockdown, it really was very impromptu. I set it up really just to cheer people up because there was so much doom and gloom at the time. And I just wanted people to connect and say nice things about books and enjoy that. And the effect of it has been amazing. I really have been totally overwhelmed by the way in which it's been received, and it is a friendly atmosphere. And I think that if I can do that and be part of that online, then I can learn how that feels for a whole class as well, so that all the children are feeling happy and that they've got somewhere to talk about books. And I think that's the thing with Books Near Bedtime, is that we have to learn what it feels like to be that reader amongst a community of readers. So you find out there's people who like the books you don't like, but there's people who don't like the books that you like as well. And yet that friendly, supportive atmosphere is there for us to share that and to learn about each other in a really sort of democratic way. I really like that. So all of those Twitter book groups are great.
They really are. And I think you've covered something that I think is so pertinent. When I joined Twitter, I was terrified of saying that I liked this author or didn't like that author, because I thought I would get judged. And what I love about those reading chats on Twitter is that there is no judgment. There's just an awful lot of learning. So Rich, coming to you, how, for those key stage two, upper key stage two teachers that are not using picture books in their classrooms, what would you say to them?
Oh, wow. If they're connected on Twitter, so join in our book blethers. So there's OURFP book blether is the hashtag that we use for those. And I had the pleasure of doing one during lockdown based solely on picture books, picture fiction in key stage two. And we ended up with it's not just for teachers. These sort of conversations involve librarians. It was lovely. There was a sort of a bubble, a group of secondary school practitioners as well. So it's about including everyone. And I think Twitter's obviously got that kind of, we're sometimes operating within bubbles, but I think ways that can help people connect. I know when I started off, it can be a bit like an echo chamber. But if you start to sort of use those sort of hashtags like OURFP, it kind of broadens that reach. And as Teresa was mentioning about sort of looking for recommendations, it can be a great place. I've sort of tends to sort of be this hashtag. I think it's sort of book rich, wallet poor. I spent a lot of money on books as a result of being on Twitter, as I'm sure lots of your listeners will do as well. But I also thought, as we're just talking, a lot of this can also be outside of Twitter. So going into a sort of a local, and if you have an independent bookshop and sort of popping into them, I've got a fantastic local children's bookshop called The Alligator's Mouth, and the staff there are so knowledgeable that it's that kind of conversations that I have on Twitter in real life, and being able to sort of pick up and explore sort of those bookshops. So I know John Biddle's started to plot a map on an interactive map with a lot of these independents, and I think that that's really crucial. Yes, we can sort of go online, but going into a sort of a bookshop, as lots of us I'm sure absolutely adore, is a really important sort of way to widen our knowledge and sort of go beyond just thinking our novels in Key Stage 2, we should be looking at sort of picture fiction and really exploring sort of those really deep and meaningful sort of connections that children can make between sort of the book themselves and their own lives.
Absolutely. It's so, so important. I could quite literally talk to the four of you forever about this subject, but I do realise that you've got lives to get back to. So I will just go to my final question that I ask everyone, because I'm just so nosy. If you could have had anyone to be your perfect teacher, and you can choose anyone living or dead, who would it have been? And I'm going to start with Sonia.
I think I would have had Maya Angelou. I've written down why. I think she would bring wisdom, she'd bring justice, and I just think that she'd be unequivocally ambitious for me. And I just think that ambition for children is just something that's so powerful. And if we can empower children to be ambitious and see that they're there to be nurtured and grown and they can be what they want to be, I think she would do that for me. So Maya Angelou.
Love that. What about you, Rich?
Oh, this was an impossible question. I had about a list of about 20. So I'll try. I will just say one. But yeah, I've had the pleasure of being sort of taught by Michael Rosen with my MA recently. So I've gone for someone completely different. And Nicola Davies was mine. Not only sort of a picture fiction writer, but someone who's a very big advocate for the natural world and looking after our planet. So yeah, Nicola Davies was mine.
Brilliant choice. What about you, Ben?
Mine is a person, but actually it's a school. So my ideal teacher would be A.S. Neil, who set up Summerhill School in Leiston back at the beginning of the 20th century, which is a rather unusual school in a lot of ways, in that the children run the school themselves with the teachers there. And I would have absolutely adored to have been part of that as a child. I mean, I think my dream one day will be to work there, because it's all about the child, and it's about developing each individual child through their own choices. Go back right to the beginning of this conversation where Teresa talked about choice. I think it is so crucial to value those individual minds and thoughts, and to be part of that journey. It's a privilege to do that in the state sector at the moment, but I think that school in particular, and what A.S. Neil believed is my absolute ideal.
Absolutely. I'm going to be going Googling that very soon. And
about that for ages, but I won't.
And finally, last but by no means least, Teresa, who would have been your perfect teacher?
Well, it's so intriguing, Toria, because two of the people I've chosen have already been chosen. So that shows how much synergy there is. I had Mike down, Rosen, and I had Nicola Davies down, Rich. So isn't that intriguing? So I'll move on from those two because I had others. Margaret Meek was my MA tutor, actually, at the Institute of Education, and she was a great teacher, and I'd have loved it if she taught me as a child. But the person I'm going to zoom in on most is Anna Craft. Professor Anna Craft was a colleague of mine at the Open University. She was also at Exeter. Sadly, she's no longer with us. But she taught me a lot in that time about creativity, about children's agency, about the power of the imagination, not through fiction per se. She wasn't a literacy expert. She was an expert in creativity. But she always had that kind of light in her eyes, that kind of passion when you were talking and debating, even if you were in an appraisal situation, as it were, that showed she cared. And there's something about Nicola Davies's eyes, I think, and Margaret's and Mike's that kind of connect to you as a human. And for me, a perfect teacher is somebody who sees through the mess, the child, the pens, the ripped up paper, the frustrations into the human inside. And so I'd love to have been taught by Anna in my younger years.
Gosh, really powerful. Thank you so much, all of you, for taking the time out to come and teach me more about reading for pleasure. And, you know, I will be looking at the Research Rich Pedagogy's website, joining reading groups and joining in the book chats even more. So thank you. And I wish you all a lovely day.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Toria.
Cheers.